Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas. It's Tuesday, July 18th, and it is a heat index of over 100 here in North Texas. So what do you do when it feels like 106? And they say 106, but I actually think it's warmer than that. But then again, I'm not going to get into an argument with the thermometer, but my goodness, it is absolutely as hot as it's been all year long. So I guess we're going to have a discussion with our friend George Rodriguez today. We're going to talk about a couple of important topics. The first one is the ongoing problem with the GOP Senate and the repeal, replace. Like a lot of you, I'm really disappointed that this is happening at this stage of the timeline, if you will. I mean, this has been a promise that they made going back to 2010. I always thought that repeal would be the best thing to do, just repeal and let the states deal with Obamacare or health care in general. The federal government can always, of course, provide cash if necessary. So I was always in favor of repeal only. But anyway, they decided to do repeal and replace, and now President Trump said this afternoon, we're not going to do anything. We're just going to let it fold. Of course, that got the Democrats all excited because they know what that means. It means that they're going to have to answer a few questions. So anyway, we'll talk about Obamacare and the GOP. I also have a post over at the American Thinker about our friends at La Raza. La Raza has decided to change its name. And this article that I read from my friend Mike Gonzalez of the Heritage Foundation, he thinks that it's a very strategic move, that it's they decided to change the name from La Raza to Unidos USA, because they want to change their image. They feel that their image is too much to the left, and they're not connecting that much with a lot of Hispanics who are more conservative and maybe not as far to the left as La Raza has been over the years. So we'll hear what George has to say, because being down in San Antonio, I bet he's had a few conversations with La Raza over the last few years. So let me say hello to my friend George Rodriguez. George, tell me that it's 70 and like in San Diego, down in San Antonio.
Far from it. Far from it. I'm not sure that our index is as high as yours, but boy, it is hot today. Let me tell you. Woo!
Yeah, it is hot up here too. And I'm just, you know, the heat index is one of those things that I guess I'm not exactly sure how they calculate that. I don't think a thermometer does it, but I think it's just one of those conclusions they come to based on the temperature and the air and all of that. But it feels like 106 from what I've read. And
yeah,
that's pretty hot to me.
Right.
Yeah, when it
it's
gets
pretty
to
hot
me,
up
any,
here.
Yeah, as I say, any time it goes into three digits, you're into hot territory. I don't care what number it is, you're into very hot territory. Well, I want to talk about a couple of big stories with you today, George. Obamacare and La Raza. Why don't we begin with La Raza? I have a post over at the American Thinker today, which is based on a story that Mike Gonzalez of the Heritage Foundation wrote about La Raza. Mike is arguing that La Raza has an image problem, that they're seen as too far to the left, as too radical, and they want to go a little bit more mainstream, especially now that they're going to have to deal with Republican Congresses, not only in Washington, but in most of the states. So I just wanted to get your thoughts about La Raza changing its name and maybe some of your encounters with them over the years. I write in my post, George, that I think they're just doing a name change. But I don't think they're going to change their philosophy. They're still going to be a mouthpiece for for the left wing of the Democrat Party, but maybe I'm being too harsh on them, George.
No, I agree with you. I think, you know, a rose by any other name is still going to be a rose, and a left-leaning radical group by any other name is still going to be a left-leaning radical group. I think that that the name change of La Raza has come about for two reasons. A lot of folks, first of all, have confused them for the Raza Unida party that took root here in South Texas back in the late 60s, early 70s, and always confused them. And while they were doing that, at the same time, they were, you know, equating that movement, which was very, very radical, with them. These guys, the National Council of La Raza, while being not as militant in advocating a violent overthrow of the United States like the Raza Unida Party did, they were still a Saul Alinsky organization. The other thing that I think that has encouraged them to change their name is that literally people are understanding now that La Raza means the race, and that's about as racist as you can get. I mean, it's La Raza literally translated means the people, and it refers strictly to the Mexican Americans, to the Chicanos down here in along the border. And you know, the National Council of La Raza has taken it upon itself to be the mouthpiece for multitudes of Hispanic organizations and groups now, including Puerto Ricans, including Salvadorans, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think it was important to them to play this PR game and change. But I think you're correct. This group is an organization that is founded on Saul Alinsky principles, where they literally, in my opinion, have blackmailed a lot of corporations into giving them money and to supporting them. Otherwise, they would accuse them of being racist, accuse them of being anti-Hispanic, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's been their method of operation, is to demand money from the corporate world, in the name of equality, but in reality, it's been more of a corporate shakedown, much in the way that Jesse Jackson operates.
Right, exactly. No, I think you're exactly right. And one of the it's interesting you mentioned La Raza, or the expression La Raza, because this is a very common. In fact, when I lived in Mexico, La Raza was actually not a very nice thing to say to people. It was, well, at least with my experience when talking to Mexican friends, they would say La Raza, basically talking about sort of looking down at people.
That's true.
It was seen by many as almost a racist term. And that it would be like, let's say, white Mexicans talking about, let's say, Native Mexicans type, and
that's how I heard it.
Then when I came to Texas, I saw La Raza, and then I even saw there's some radio stations have that name La Raza, and I thought it was being used more as a Mexican American or maybe a Mexican expression without the political or ethnic or ideological meaning, simply saying one of us, you know. It would be like, for example, La Gente, something like that. It would be like, I don't know, a radio station called La Gente or Mi Gente or something like that, referring to a group of people. But the word La Raza, I think, if you're trying to expand your operations, as you say, into other Hispanic groups, Puerto Ricans, whatever, yeah, the La Raza is simply, you know, they're going to look at you and say, well, what is this about? Because that is not something that a lot of the other, I mean, Cubans don't use that, just to give you an example. I don't think Puerto Ricans use that either. So I think they decided. But the other reason, George, I thought it was very interesting, Mike Gonzalez, in his article over at the Wall Street Journal, which is where I got this idea from, he also points out that there is a lot of things happening in the Hispanic community where there's a lot of marriages taking place, for example, between Anglos and Hispanics. So all of a sudden, you know, Susie Cruz marries John Smith. So their kids are Smith, and their kids see themselves more as Americans, not necessarily part of an oppressed group. And he feels that that's how the Hispanic community is changing, and La Raza needed to change to keep up with that change, George. I don't know if you agree or disagree with Mike
100%.
On that.
Oh, yeah, I agree 100% on that because, again, looking at my own family, I mean, I've got nephews, nieces whose last names are Roberts and Condry and Romneys. I mean, these are the folks that have married into our family, and we have integrated. I mean, the fact of the matter is that we have integrated, and that's been the big problem for the National Council of La Raza and other Hispanic nationalists, if I can call them that, who have wanted to, you know, close off their cultural borders so that they can maintain ethnic purity, or cultural purity. Well, that's not going to happen, really. Particularly in a melting pot like the United States, they have recognized that as the discrimination barriers broke down in the 40s and 50s and 60s, the integration took place, and the integration that everybody had been screaming and yelling about just happened, which is very fascinating because National Council of La Raza has been supporting Hispanic districts for the past 8 years as the redistricting efforts have gone on both in Texas and in other places. So all of a sudden they found themselves demanding almost political segregation again. So I agree 100% with Martinez that this is the new reality, is that we have so many Hispanics that have integrated, and if you notice, there's a lot of militant Hispanic women who will always hyphenate themselves, calling themselves, you know, something like Garcia Smith or something like that. They'll always hyphenate themselves, and I think that that's a direct result that they want to keep one foot in one group, and while understanding that their foot is in the other one, which I really don't understand in many ways.
Yeah. Well, you're right. And I think that this is all very interesting. By the way, one more point before we move on to – we're going to take a break and then come back with the GOP and Obamacare. But there's a lot of talk about gerrymandering, you know, that these districts are being drawn to advantage one party or the other. Now, as far as I could tell from my knowledge of American history, that's the way it was always done when the Democrats had majorities. I mean, they – I don't think it ever affected them one bit that they would squeeze out Republicans in redistricting or in districting. But I think one of the problems that, you know, when groups like La Raza or the NAACP or some of these other groups complain about districting or drawing up these boundaries, if you take a state like Texas and you say you have to have let's say, an African-American district in each major city, so Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, you have to have a district that elects a black Democrat, as we have here with Eddie Bernice Johnson. And then you have to have a district that elects a Mexican Democrat. We don't have as many of those, but I know you do down there and other places. So at this point, George, what happens is that when you create these districts, you, in essence, have a disproportionate number of white people in the other districts, and it makes it very difficult for the Democrats to compete in districts that are more white than they are minority. So it's an interesting situation because I think they've created, to some extent, meaning these minority groups, whether it's the NAACP or La Raza, they've created the problem that we have by forcing districts to be black or Mexican, George.
I agree. You know, it's been very fascinating. The League of United Latin American Citizens, LULAC, which is the other big Hispanic organization, national organization, They just finished their convention here in San Antonio a couple of weeks ago. And you know, my grandfather was part of the founding and organizing of that group back in the 1920s. And what was very, very interesting was that it was dedicated in those days to the integration of Mexican immigrants. That's what, you know, that's what literally the constitution of the organization said, that it was dedicated to the integration, that they wanted everyone to learn to speak English and become American. Somewhere along the line in the 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, that got completely sidetracked. And now, you know, these organizations, these groups, want to maintain ethnic separation. And they are victims of their own success, because the fact of the matter is that say what you want to about American society being racist, it really isn't. It really isn't, particularly in our day and age now. And we have folks who are intermarrying, who are moving up and down the socioeconomic ladder, and you know, they have a hard time sometimes identifying solely with one group and with one with one political philosophy. And I think that you're right, that they've been victims of their own success.
I agree. And even the name, the League of United Latin American Citizens, that dates it a bit, if you know what I mean. That takes it back to a time when we weren't dividing the ethnic groups by la raza or whatever. But I just feel that if you want every district to look like the state, or every district to look like the country, then, you know, that's fine. But I also think, frankly, that these issues ought to be settled by the state legislature. In other words, I know that I have no doubt that Republicans will try to take advantage of the district team, just like Democrats used to take advantage of it, just like Democrats do in California. But at the end of the day, it seems to me that is the process. You elect people, and then they draw up the districts. The idea of having judges now drawing up these districts, that worries me more than having legislators, because at least I can replace the legislator.
That's
the
exactly
judge,
right. Mm-hmm.
You know, the judge is never going to be replaced. George, let me take a quick break. We're going to hear from my friend Carlos, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about Obamacare.
This is Carlos Quevez, harpist, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
Well, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas. If you have an account at Facebook or a page at Facebook, I would recommend that you follow Carlos Guedes. Just, you know, send him a friendship request, and he'll be happy to respond. And that way you'll be up to date with all of his concerts and all of his musical activities. So Carlos Guedes, a great friend of our show, and he lets us use his music. And, of course, we help him whenever we can to promote his concerts and his many activities. Let's get back to George Rodriguez, our good friend down in San Antonio, where George, I think, just told me that it was like springtime, right? It was like just
spring
a lovely spring day. Yeah, that's right. A lovely spring day down in San Antonio, like we have them up here in Texas. But let's talk a little bit about another big story of the day. And I think, in all fairness, let's say that it is a developing story. I'm still not convinced that it's over. President Trump is going to have senators at the White House either tonight or tomorrow. And I'm not convinced this is over yet. I still think they may pull it off. But based on where we are right now, it doesn't seem like they have the votes to repeal and replace, particularly repeal and replace. George, I've always been one of those who was more inclined to say, let's repeal and then let's take our time to replace, if replace at all. Maybe have some of these functions done at the state level or whatever. But now President Trump today said, if we cannot get anything done, he's just going to let Obamacare fail, which politically I think is a win-win for the Republicans, because the Democrats are going to have to defend Obamacare when premiums go up like they're expected to in many states, 27% in Colorado, I heard, in one of them. So your thoughts, George, on just where this whole thing is and where you think it's going, George?
Well, first of all, I'm disappointed because, you know, I've been involved in the Tea Party and with conservative politics for the past 7 years, specifically because of Obamacare. I mean, the whole genesis of the grassroots conservative movement was a direct response to Obamacare. And, you know, we've been pushing, or I've been hoping and praying that a Republican takeover, not only of the White House, but of the Congress, would have led to at least a repeal. And so I'm disappointed in that. On the other hand, I recognize that, you know, that the politics involved right now, there's a lot of fear on the part of Republicans because I think that the media and the Democrats have been so successful in scaring people. I mean, everything from that, you know, from that advertisement that that was out a couple of years ago of grandma getting pushed off of a cliff, the constant beating of the drum that people are going to die, people are going to die, people are going to die. I think that scared a lot of the Republicans. I think that they are, that some of them have gotten cold feet as to what to do. On the other hand, it's also a very, very confusing issue. I mean, it is very, I mean, the only thing that people know is that there needs to be some type of insurance that covers their health needs. They don't know exactly what that means. They don't know how it's going to be done. They don't know how it should be paid, but they want, that's what they want. Coupling, you know, putting those things together, it has become a very, very hot potato for a lot of these Republican elected officials, and I can understand why some of them have gotten cold feet. On the other hand, I'm very, very upset that they did get cold feet, and I think that something needs to do. Now, you know, what needs to be done, I don't know, because, you know, we can watch. It's like watching a slow train wreck. I mean, this Obamacare is just falling apart. It's caving. My worry is that in the process of it falling apart, that it is replaced quickly by something worse or something equally as bad. So, you know, watching the demise of Obamacare, it's painful. We knew it was going to happen. The question is, you know, now what? Particularly with the Republicans who need to get a little bit of a backbone and act and do something.
Right. I'm with you. I'm with you on the backbone. I think they're watching too much. Maybe they're watching too much television and not listening to their own constituents. Because I have always felt, George, that there's two groups in this Obamacare debate. There are people who are actually paying premiums, and they represent a variety of people, small business people, you know, single people, self-employed people. And they're actually paying the premiums, and they're unhappy with Obamacare because Obamacare, for example, forces a – and this is a true case that I read about – a lady who's like 55, who's self-employed, has to get Obamacare with maternity. Well, a 55-year-old single lady does not need maternity.
Exactly.
She used to have a catastrophic plan before, and that's all she wants, just a catastrophic plan that covers her. So I think that what they need to do is they need to maybe look at the landscape and say, okay, in my district, in my state, how many people are actually paying premiums and how many people are being subsidized to have Obamacare? And I say how many people are being subsidized because those people are never going to vote Republican anyway.
That's exactly right. The
people they need to worry about are the ones paying premiums or the ones paying the taxes. Now, I'll say one more thing about the Democrats. There is a popular point of view among many of us, people on our side, that is, that if the Democrats were to become the majority party in the House, and, you know, history is on their side, usually the president loses the Congress on his first try, midterm. So, I mean, history is on the Democrat side. I don't think it's going to happen, but if it were to happen, that they're going to push through universal care or single payer. And I don't agree with that because, as we saw in California when they tried to do it, and California is the perfect place for a single payer in the sense that they've got all the votes they need. They've got super majorities. All they have to do is put it up for a vote, and they get it. And they couldn't do it because they found out, George, as I'm sure you know, that when they calculated the cost of single payer, it was bigger than the whole state budget. So I think that if the Democrats were to take over the House, I think they may run into the same problem, that what sounded really good at the campaign rally is going to be a lot more difficult to implement. And a little bit like some Republicans who said, we're going to give us a shot and we'll repeal it. Well, turning out to be a little bit more complicated. Long-winded answer, but I just wanted to get my or reply to what you said. But I do think you're right. I think they got to get a backbone. They have to say, if you're going to say that my solution is going to kill people, I'm going to fight back and call you on it, and let's have a debate about that. But they never do. They're always afraid of – I guess maybe they think that the best defense is being a nice gentleman. Well, being a nice gentleman is a nice thing to do, but it didn't work real well for George W. Bush, especially the last couple of years when he never fought back and he allowed the Democrats to rewrite the history of the Iraq War, George.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, there comes a time where you've got to where you really have to call it as it is. In this situation, you're right. I mean, it is a convoluted situation in some ways, but it's also very, very simple, you know, in others. There is you have a problem with a program that was it's like pieces of every type of animal in the world were crafted together and then expected to somehow function. They created a legislative Frankenstein, and this monster now doesn't seem to want to die, but it is dying on its own, thank heaven. It is a situation where folks need to take a deep breath and understand what we're paying out of. Because let me tell you, my pocketbook has taken a beating in the past 8 years. It has taken a beating.
Right. Well, the cost of healthcare. I think I don't remember if I mentioned it the last time you and I were on, but there's a young man, a young couple at our church who just had their second baby, or they're supposed to have their second baby this week, so I'm assuming they did. And they were paying a horrific amount for Obamacare premiums to the point that it was the largest expense in their budget, larger than their home. And when you reach a situation like that, you really have to ask yourself, what am I doing even paying the premium? So I would caution the Democrats not to spike the football just yet, because if in fact Trump, and probably Trump is the only one who would have the guts to do it, if Trump says, well, we're not going to do anything about it, we're just going to let it go under, George, if let's say early 2018, we're talking about 27% premiums, or percent increases, we're talking about more insurance companies dropping out, and
counties without any coverage.
Exactly. Then,
I mean, that's not good.
No, not at all. Trump's going to say, look, I had nothing to do with this. We tried to do it. And he may find that the situation is different. But I am disappointed that the Republicans did not have a better idea I am disappointed. I really thought that they had thought this thing through, and I guess they were all in favor of repeal in the abstract, because whatever they did before didn't matter, because they weren't going to,
Three senators have been criticized for voting in 2015 for repeal of Obamacare, but having backed off on repeal this time around. So I mean, I think that there's some, we can ask a question about, you know, their motives. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, as I said at the beginning of our conversation, I'm not 100% sure that this is lost yet. Because if we're talking about two or three senators, I still think you can lose two, I guess, and still make it with Vice President Pence. I don't think you're going to get Senator Paul, and it looks like you may not get Senator Collins up in Maine. Another one is the senator from Arizona, who is also those three, if you can get one of those three back, I think Senator Collins could be, and I hate to use the word bought, but she could be brought back with some type of a special consideration, like what was done with Obamacare in, you know, the Nebraska Compromise or whatever that was. So I still think this thing can be done, but I am disappointed that you and I are talking about this tonight. I would have expected us to be talking about a success story, not this, George.
Yeah, that's the disappointment, particularly when we have a Republican president, a Republican Senate, and a Republican House, and here we are talking this way. It's not a happy time in Mud City, that's for sure.
No, and it really, you begin to wonder also at what point are the parties really united, because it seems to me you have senators like Collins who are basically liberals. And although Senator Collins is very good on national security, you got to give her credit for that. You know, she was one of the three Republican senators who voted for the stimulus back in 2009.
Yeah.
So you begin to wonder, you know, you begin to wonder, our two-party system, does it even make any sense? Would it be better if everybody just to be an independent and you vote for people and not parties? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe that would invite only people of wealth who could afford to run. I don't know. But I am.
You know, it's not a happy time.
No, it's not at all. Hopefully there'll be a resolution, but you're exactly right. I am very disappointed that we are talking about this tonight, at least in the context of inaction. Rather than action. But thank you so much, as always, George. It's always
my pleasure.
A delight.
Thank you
to
very
have.
Much for calling.
It's always a delight to have you on the show and talk about a few of these things. And thank you for your time. And get back. Don't go outside, I guess I should say.
No, we're gonna. Teddy and I are gonna wait till around 9:30 to go out.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? I do the same thing. I wait till like 8:30, 9 o'clock to go out for my exercises. So you have a bunch of. You have a bunch of 9 p.m. people walking their dogs or walking around here. Everybody waits until the end of the evening or first thing in the morning, which I've never been able to do. I'm not a morning jogger or whatever, walker. It's not my thing. But, George, have a great day, and thank you for your time.
You too. Thank you very much for calling. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. George Rodriguez, our good friend down in San Antonio, a couple of issues today on Obamacare. I'm disappointed that we are where we are. I thought these senators were better prepared for the moment they would have to make this call. But as I said at the beginning of the show and while I was having the conversation with George, I'm not discounting the possibility that two things happen. Number one, these senators begin to get a lot of pressure from home. The phone numbers just go crazy. The phones just go crazy with these senators getting phone calls from home demanding something. And I also think that they may begin to realize that not doing anything is the worst option politically for them. Although I do agree with President Trump, and on this I agree with him. I think if you just let Obamacare fail, that might be the moment next year when the whole thing has collapsed, and then at that point the Democrats can no longer afford to sit out, because what are they going to be defending? I mean, the whole system has crashed. So interesting situation, interesting times, and we'll continue talking about it. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Have a good evening, and we'll talk to you later.